WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
The label fascist has been making a comeback in recent years, and this time it's coming as much from the right as the left. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg has been wondering why Americans in particular are so fond of the epithet.
You'd figure no one would quarrel with describing Saddam Hussein's regime as fascist. It seemed to have a lot of the features of classical fascism, the militaristic nationalism, a secular religion of the state, and a government by secret police terror. And that's not to mention the grandiose monuments and the silly high-peaked officers' hats like the ones the Germans and Italians used to wear. But Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi stirred up a controversy recently when he complained to some British journalists that labeling Saddam a fascist disparaged Mussolini's regime, which he called comparatively benign. Mussolini never killed anyone, he said, not quite accurately. Mussolini used to send people on vacation in internal exile. Those fine distinctions are apt to be lost on Americans who don't have any intimate historical memories of fascism with a capital F. Fascist is a word that we throw around as easily as bastard, and with no more heed to its literal meaning. That began with the 60s radicals, who borrowed the epithet from the international left. It was a moment when polarizations were the common syntax, as Todd Gitlin has put it. The charge of fascism became a way of distancing yourself from the tired civilities of liberalism and rejecting all forms of social control. It stood in for any of the reasons why you weren't going to work on Maggie's farm no more. When William F. Buckley brought a defamation suit against the author of a 1969 book for calling him a fascist, the court ruled that the word was too vague to be actionable. The collapse of the radical movements of the 60s temporarily bleached fascist of its tone of rage and left it as a jocular term for anybody who was trying to impose a rigid pattern of behavior. There are fashion fascists and wine fascists, fascistic anti-smoking ordinances, and those fascistic seatbelts that lock you in automatically when you close the car door. But lately, fascist has been making a comeback as a political epithet. The anger stirred up by the Iraq War and domestic anti-terrorism programs has leftists pulling the word out of the closet along with tie-dye t-shirts and chants of hey, hey, ho, ho. You don't see it used much as an epithet in liberal publications like The Nation or The American Prospect, but the web is full of it. An Alta Vista search turns up more than 7,500 pages where fascist or fascism appear within 10 words of Ashcroft or Bush. But this time around, the right has adopted the epithet as well. Granted, it's appropriate to use fascist for Saddam Hussein's regime. But even there, it's striking that not many people were making that comparison at the time of the first Gulf War. In 1990, there were only 11 stories in major newspapers and magazines where somebody described Saddam's regime as fascist. Over the past year, there have been more than 150. And it's more of a stretch when people use phrases like Islamofascist to describe Islamic fundamentalists. The Taliban government may have been a nasty and repressive theocracy, but it didn't try to make religion subordinate to the state the way Hitler and Mussolini did, quite the opposite. It's as if the evils of the Taliban or bin Laden aren't sufficient to the day. We can't go after anybody now without comparing the campaign to the good war against Hitler and bringing the old rhetoric of appeasement into play. In fact, the mainstream right has taken to using fascist with a reckless brio that we used to associate with Abby Hoffman and Jerry Rubin. Rush Limbaugh has described Dick Gebhardt's healthcare program as fascist, and a while ago, the director of the American Conservative Union attached the label to Tim Robbins. And the irrepressible Ann Coulter compares Katie Couric to both Eva Braun and Joseph Goebbels. That's a hermaphroditic image clash I have some trouble getting my head around. The right's new enthusiasm for fascist has a lot to do with the fall of communism, which left those old epithets like pinko and communistic sounding quaint and retro. There was a time when the right would routinely refer to the ACLU as communist sympathizers or fellow travelers. Nowadays, Bill O'Reilly describes the group as a fascist organization which uses their legal clout to terrorize various school districts and individuals. That doesn't make a lot of historical sense. Real fascists didn't try to litigate their way to power. If they did, they wouldn't have been fascists. But then, few of the Americans who use fascist nowadays have much interest in dotting their historical I's. Like Big Brother or Orwellian, it's a spandex specter that you can stretch over everything that smacks of excessive control and surveillance, whether it's coming from the left, the right, or the seatbelt makers. The loose use of fascist comes particularly easy to Americans. For most of the peoples of Europe, the word still conjures up a shameful episode that has to be lived down, or in Berlusconi's case, excused away. But we can toss the fascist label around with easy abandon, secure in the conviction that really it can't happen here, as Sinclair Lewis entitled his 1935 novel about a fascist takeover of the U.S. We Americans may not have a vivid sense of history, but we react viscerally against anything that someone can get us to picture wearing boots and a high-peaked hat.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at Stanford University's Center for the Study of Language and Information and the author of the book, The Way We Talk Now.